Welcome to the IRIS podcast. You are listening to a talk as part of the Data Linkage and Mining Vision, Possibilities and Practicalities Conference organised by the Scottish University's Insight Institute. This talk was recorded on the 11th of March 2011. Phil Anderson, Australian Institute of Health and Welfare, assessing the feasibility of linking datasets.
Thank you for inviting me here. I've had a good week. I've actually been visiting around both Wales and Steve's group in Edinburgh, so it's been very educational for me as well, because I'm not going to talk about this, but we are also in the process of trying to establish a national linkage system in Australia, and the Commonwealth Government has been promulgating certain principles about how we link data. And in fact, our model looks a little bit like the Scottish one, but we don't have any sort of universal identifier. There's been a strong history in Australia of resisting that sort of thing. There is one or two potential candidates, but that would probably take legislative change. But anyway, I won't say anything more about that. What I've been asked to talk about is a particular project we've been carrying out involving the linkage of child protection, homelessness and juvenile justice data. We haven't actually got any results from this project yet, but my understanding is you're interested in the process we went through in this exercise. We're in the middle of the linkage at the moment. Some things will be probably not very relevant to the... There are sort of differences and similarities between the Australian and Scottish situation, so some things won't be very relevant, perhaps, but I'll tell you the whole story and you can pick up on the things that you think are most relevant, and I'll try and connect it to what's been said this morning and in the past few days as well. So I'll just give you an introduction about what the Institute does and the sort of linkage work we actually do, just to give you the context. Then the rationale for why we decided to link these particular data sets, the available data we have, the ethical issues that we have to go through, and something that maybe hasn't been talked so much about over the 3 days is actually, I think there are quite important methodological issues which you don't often think about, because the whole process of linking is so difficult to get there often or through all these other things that... But there are some methodological issues to think about, and I'll have a few reflections on how the process is going. And some of the things will actually resonate, I think, with what Melissa said on Wednesday. Even though it's in a totally different sort of context, there are some of the same general sort of issues. Well, there's Australia. I put this up to show, because all our processes are flavoured by the fact that we're a federation, and 6 states and 2 territories, and the states have quite different characteristics. And so every time we do something, we have to get the states together, and part of the role of the Institute is sort of being an honest broker between the states and the Commonwealth in data issues. I didn't do the cliched thing of putting Scotland on the map, but it is a little bit bigger than Tasmania, which is a bit over 1% of the land area. Although I did read last week somewhere that if you stretched out the Scottish coastline, you'd get all the way to New Zealand, which is basically Tasmania. So these are where the floods have been, the worst ones, but then the cyclone across there, more flooding down here. Lake Eyre in the middle here, which gets filled by those rivers, has been filled for the first time in memory in 2 years in a row. It's incredible wildlife there, which is normally a desert salt pan. So I'm having to get out there, actually. We've just actually launched our new website, so I thought I'd put it up to show you. And in fact, the top report that's just out is actually, a technical report that we released recently. I forget all the things we do, so I do have to read this out sometimes. The role of the Institute is basically to collect and produce and coordinate health and welfare related information and statistics, and also to conduct and promote research into the health of Australians and their health services. So on the health side, we're probably fairly analogous to the ISD, and you see we even have better information and statistics for better health and wellbeing, very similar, similar mission statement. Another important role is we also develop statistical standards and classifications. That's a lot of our work in, as I've actually mentioned in one or two of the groups, is in promulgating and maintaining and developing data standards so the states all do collect the same sort of data. And we have so we have very big data dictionaries now, so that if you're using a common item in different collections, it'll be collected to the same way. And those data dictionaries are so big now, they have to be online. We actually have if you can go to our Meteor, you can go to our metadata online registry, and if you might want to go and have a look at sort of things that are there. And we do make recommendations to the minister, supposedly, on the prevention and treatment of diseases and promotion of health and health awareness. We have our own act, and subject to section 29 of that act, researchers are able to access health and welfare related information and statistics. Under that act, we're required to have an ethics committee, and the ethics committee has to give approval for any identifiable information to be released, or potentially identifiable information. Each year we either produce, and we're required to by our legislation, Australia's Health or Australia's Welfare. So Australia's Welfare is coming out this year, and they're actually reports to Parliament, but they're also widely used by students, teachers, policy makers, because they give you a general overview of all our areas of work in the health and welfare fields. And then at the same time, we produce two or three reports a week, so we hold a lot of the national collections in hospitals, cancer database, in the community services side, we've got disability services, homelessness services, child protection isn't actually quite a collection yet, I'll talk about that in a moment, juvenile justice, and we routinely report on those as well as doing particular pieces of research. So about a third of our funding now is core funding, and the rest comes from doing particular pieces of work. Anyway, that's probably enough about. So the Institute's been doing data linkage for probably 10 or 15 years. For a long time with that was sort of piecemeal across the Institute, but in the last 2 years we've had a data linkage unit which I now head. The sorts of linkage we've done is internal linkage within national data collections. So when we get, for example, disability services, people can be using a number of different services, some of which are Commonwealth. Commonwealth runs employment services. States run most of the rest, like accommodation or daycare. And so to find out, to get from a sort of service-based collection to a person-based collection, we do internal linkage. The bread and butter of the linkage unit actually is the National Death Index and the Australian Cancer Database, and they have names and dates of birth, and outside researchers can link to both of those with approval. We're doing some particular work in hospital and aged care data linkage projects. They're our own projects, partly because the aged care data lends itself most to these projects, but also because the aged care sector has become so complex that there's just a proliferation of data sets and to understand what's happening in the whole system. And I'm going to use one or two examples of that later just to show the sort of data that you might get when you connect up a lot of things. We're also trying to improve the quality of Indigenous identification by linking between different data sets where Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people are identified, which is a routine thing now. That's a whole topic in its own right. And in the community services sector, we're now trying to, that's what we call, what you call social care, we call community services, yeah. We're now, because we've done a lot of linkage on the health side, we're now trying to develop our linkage in the community services data. And this project is sort of our first step that I'm going to talk about. And there's also another project that's been done which I'll mention because it's relevant on the education results of children on orders. We do use various methods of linkage. Where we have names and date of birth, we use probabilistic. We've got a thing called a statistical linkage key, which we're using for this project, which I'll show you, describe. And we've also done some event-based linkage where you don't have actual name data, but you can track people from one service to another, for example, going from hospital to nursing care, residents for aged care nursing homes, by following through the dates that they leave one and enter the other and some other information. So basically, because of the different sorts of information we get for different sort of collections, we use whatever we can when we're linking them. And sometimes we have a mixture of methods for the same data because we're getting different data from different states. So the rationale for, starting to link community services data, first of all, there's various policy agendas, and I've just put a whole list of policy language that you've probably seen in your context. So for a long time we've been talking about whole of government, how the government as a whole, the departments can work together, and we have whole of governments working across state governments as well. Social inclusion has been a big push for that since the recent government. Our current Prime Minister was formerly the Minister for Education, Employment, Workplace Relations and Social Inclusion. Early invention, particularly in child support services, there's been a push to do more family support before the children become at high risk. And part of that is if you can join up services, then you can do better early intervention by identifying the places you can come in and the best points you can have the service. And we also talk about high and complex needs of people who have multiple needs and need multiple services, so you've got to try and treat the person. And there's been a particular focus on child protection. Lately we've been establishing a national framework for protecting Australia's children was established in 2008, and that was done through consultation with government, non-government organisations, service providers, academics and young people themselves. And so even though it's a state-provided service, the Commonwealth Government is very interested in what happens and is... and also homelessness has been a big push, and we're actually redeveloping the homelessness data because it's been a government priority. The Minister would actually like, I think, to be able to track every homeless person through their whole trajectory. That's very difficult, but... And the other point, there's a big closing the gap agenda for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders who, depending who you talk to, have a life expectancy gap between, what estimate you take, 12 and 17 years, and also in a lot of the other indicators, like, for example, in juvenile detention, these big bars are the number per thousand on an average day of Indigenous people compared to the small bars of non-Indigenous people. So the rate ratio, which hasn't changed over the last 4 years of this data, is around 25, 27. For child protection, it's not quite so bad. It's about 10 to 12, depending upon the state. So, and the other rationale is that research in Australia, like probably internationally, this is both academic and sort of reports, has shown that there are strong relationships between child maltreatment, criminal activity and homelessness. And so children who suffered abuse and neglect, if you really want the Australian references, you can email me to ask them, engage in criminal activity, young people involved in child protection, overrepresented among the homeless. Many young people under juvenile justice supervision not living in the family home before supervision, and not quite such strong evidence that they have difficulties finding stable accommodation after they come out. All right. And I suppose there's two main reasons why you link data, I guess. One is that you're actually trying to put together different bits of information on the same person, usually in the sort of the same period. The other one is that you're actually trying to follow someone through a pathway, through services or through other life events. And and it gives you a totally different view of what's happening. So it's person-based. Instead of getting just... We've got lots of different data collections for all sorts of services that haven't been connected up. You get a longitudinal view, instead of just what's happening at 1 year or one particular point of time, and you can talk about flows. I think one of the things to think about is that it's a real longitudinal view. It's not even like a longitudinal survey, which tends to have a panel. So you get people this year, 3 years' time, 6 years' time, so you've got a sort of regular data collection. You actually get data on people at any point in time, and you can get any sort of data, you know. So you're getting, you might get a lot of data for one time, not so much. So you've got to think about ways that it's handled. So you get the pathways through services. So as I said, the Institute holds a lot of large national administrative data sets. The three that we're looking at is the Supported Accommodation Assistance Program, which we'll call SAP. That's, as I said, is currently being redeveloped into a bigger collection. The Juvenile Justice National Minimum Dataset, so we have most of these collections are called National Minimum Datasets because it's an agreement about the minimum data that everyone will collect, so they may collect more in their own states. And the Child Protection National Dataset, which has been under development for about 10 years, but is now being piloted in 5 states pretty well as we speak. We haven't had unit record data for that, and the Institute does report on aggregate data that's sent from the states. But 2 states have given us unit record data, and one in particular, Victoria, has the best. So what we're linking, we've got juvenile justice data for actually now another year because we've had to wait so long to get approvals. We've got 10 years. And the good thing about juvenile justice is there is actually a person ID in the state data, so it is a longitudinal data set itself. The Supported Accommodation Assistance Program, we've only have the data for linkage back about 3 years, and in fact we found 1 year wasn't very good at all, although the collection itself goes back further. Child Protection from Victoria, which also has IDs in it, and in fact I think we can even go back further than 2000 now if we want. We've got child protection data from Tasmania. So then you've got to look at whether the data collections are in a state that you can link. The things we've got to think about are permission to link, privacy and ethics, ability to link, do we have the linkage variables there to do it? Are the data items available, and then is there actually an overlap between those collections that's worth analysing? And also, can you identify a person within the separate data sets so you don't have such a difficulty in linking? And what are the possibilities for analysis? So when you combine the data sets, what can you do with them? And ethics, and we have to get, we call them data custodians in Australia, not controllers, because we do, the Privacy Act does look at them as being custodians of the data, and it's the person whose data it is actually owns the data. So they have to get permissions from data custodians, and usually through national committees which are sort of state committees in each sector as well. We have to get ethics committee approvals, both our own and anybody else in the state that requires it. We do have still quite a complicated ethics committee system in Australia, which there have been attempts to simplify it and have one standard form. That form is now pretty horrific because I think they put everything in it that they can think of, whereas our own form is not too bad because the Institute committee knows how we operate. So, fortunately, in a lot of cases, one ethics committee will give you consent, will approve a project on the basis of approval by another ethics committee. The Institute itself has a very strict privacy regime based on the Institute Act. I can actually go to jail if I release somebody's identifiable information. So we've got very strong protections. We've got a data linkage protocol for internal data linkage, which is based on a separation principle like was described this morning, although within the Institute we don't require, so we separate the identifiable data used for linkage from the data used for analysis and go through that same sort of mapping, but we don't require necessarily that different people work on different things in the Institute. That may change for some projects we're forced to do that. And the issue of consent, I think this sort of fits in with Graham's talk. Informed consent is generally required, although in the case of juvenile justice and child protection, the departments, their act, I think, determines that it's not always. We just need permission from those departments. The interesting thing about consent in Australia is for health data, under the Privacy Act refers to the National Health and Medical Research Council guidelines for research. and the necessity for consent under those guidelines can be waived under certain conditions, and the main condition is that it's impractical to go back and ask everybody, and that the project is of scientific merit and of public good. So that is the usual case for a data linkage project. So that's very good for health research, and there's been a similar sort of pronouncement for criminology data, which you might regard as juvenile justice as. But for other sorts of research on humans, which includes community services, this is not yet the case. And the Law Reform Commission has actually done a review of this whole privacy thing and said that should be the case. We should be generalised, but at the moment it's not. But there's also a question about the statistical linkage key we're using for this project, whether or not it is personal data, and there's actually been different views. The legal view is that it probably isn't, as long as it's held under the right processes. But anyway, we were given approval to do this project by our ethics committee. So can you link the data? Well, we don't have an ID, so I don't know how relevant this is all going to be, but I'll show you the process we went through. In community service data sets, instead of names, there's a sector where there's been particular worries about privacy. For example, in the homelessness data, that includes women's refuges, things like that. We've managed to get a statistical linkage key put in these data sets, which are designed for linkage within and between data sets, and do work for linkage, but they're not always perfect, and if possible they're better when you can use some other data items. For example, postcode, and I've just put a note to say that our postcodes are far bigger than yours. So, and we have just that report that was on top of our website showed that under certain conditions it's as good as name-based linkage if you've got enough other data items. And we've actually... So the way it works is you get three letters of surname, two letters of given name, date of birth and sex, and so this... So we've got 2, 3 and 5 from the surname, 2 and 3 from the given name, date of birth, and F for female, and that's our linkage key, and we've got the SLK 581 because it's 5 letters, 8 date of birth and 1 sex. The reason why it's not the first initials is because that could be possibly more identifiable back to the thing, to your name. So... In a way, you can't actually get back to the name from this linkage key, which is... And it's not totally accurate. In fact, when we're talking to the sectors, that was a plus, because it's saying we can't... For statistical purposes, that's what's a statistical linkage key, it's good enough to follow flows of people, but we can't identify individual people. And as I said, it's good if we can use other shared data items. And often dates of events are also good, as I talked about with event. And we've got a particular method now we'll use for this, which I won't bore you with, but I think I'll just impress you that there is a technical basis to this. But it picks the best matches first, and then you actually deconstruct your keys and use less and less items of information until you decide that you can't go any further. And they're the rules we use. I wouldn't worry about that. And I just thought I'd put in a formula, because I'm a statistician, so... And this is the sort of output you get too. So these are quite a complex process, but we've done a lot of work on getting it to work. So on balance, we decided linkage was feasible, and particularly as a juvenile justice, a longitudinal data, and we can use that as an anchoring data set. And the child protection data is also longitudinal. The homeless service data includes accompanying... So when a family goes, you get information on the parents and the accompanying children, and we're obviously interested in the children in this case. So then we do get some information back on the family. Postcode's available, but not always reliable for people who have just become homeless. But the method allows for using it where we can. And so we've done some preliminary linkage, and there's about 370,000 people in the whole database, and then there's an overlap among those. I think So it varies between, depending how what view you take from what data set, it varies between about 7 or 8% and 17%. And I think so, I think for the juvenile justice, that represents about 18,000 people. So we do have quite a good cohort of people. The problem is, you're in Australia, depending upon the state, you're classified as a juvenile from age 10 up to at least age 16, but in some states it's age 18. And even in Victoria has a dual track system where you can be regarded, the court can still regard you as a juvenile up to age 21. So obviously we've got you don't really have to worry about the details of this, but given we've got a certain period of data from each collection, you've got to try and think about what people are actually going to be moving through those data sets and how that's going to work. And so if you can group it into sort of the groups where people are born, that's from the juvenile justice perspective. So we decided we can link. So we're just finalising the linkage now, so we have a linked data set, actually probably another month or so, because we're trying to fine-tune it. But the data sets have all basic demographic items, and they have extensive service provision information, so we know when people are using services all the way along. We do have longitudinal data over a sufficient period, although we would like longer period. And we do have this family information for accompanying children and homelessness services. And we can think about particular groups of interest that we're going to analyse. So we've got young people moving between homelessness services and juvenile justice supervision, people exiting juvenile justice supervision, and I should say that includes both detention and community orders, the collection. There's far more people under community supervision and in detention. And entering homelessness immediately or after a period. And then children involved in the child protection system and being accompanying children, the homelessness parents, or maybe later on their own. So there's various sort of levels we've got. And I think you have to think through how, in these sort of situations, how your people are actually moving through the system. And so methodological issues, we haven't talked much about this, but you might be right because Steve's going to do a perfectly accurate linkage through the system for you, so you don't have to worry about it at all. But in our case, we do have to think about how accurate the linkage is. And your analysis may depend upon this, and obviously in a big study like this where you're doing national data and there's thousands of people, you can have a bit of error because it's just like having a survey error. But if you want to get actual estimates of flow about how many people, you have to have some idea about how accurate your linkage is and if you're missing a lot of people. The trouble with that is that you may not have a gold standard against which to match that. We're just sort of thinking about how we might do that at the moment. You're going to be looking at different groups of people and what sort of analysis you can do with them. And there's another thing I put in. The analysis of pathways of events can be quite complex. As I said before, you can just get this too much data. And you've also got to think about what happens if you get contradictory data. You've got the same item in both collections and they say different things. Are you going to take one over the other? So you've got to think about the reliability of your data sets. The reliability may differ between different items in your data set. So, and I think a lot of these issues you leave to later because you think, oh, I just want to get the linked data, and get it together and that'd be great. And that often takes so long that by the time you... And we've found that you may need some cutting-edge statistical methods. So you may need a statistician to help you. I am a statistician, but there's still methods that I don't. I haven't done much hands-on stuff for a long time, actually. So, I've just given you examples of the aged care data analyses that we've got about 3 or 4 projects in this area. I'll just give you a couple of quick examples just to give you the flavour of the sort of data that you can get. And we talked about people's stories. You're actually putting together people's little stories, and this is Pathways for the Aged Care. What we did in this project was take a whole cohort of people who've got an aged care assessment, which you need for certain services in a particular year, and then followed them through for the next 3 years to see what services they actually got. And this doesn't even have all their services on. This is just people who actually ended up in residential aged care and what they had before. So the purple is permanent nursing home. And you can see that some people get, and the green is a particular type of community package, and the red is when they get their assessment. Sometimes they get reassessed and don't actually get many more services. This person may, these are made-up names, of course, hasn't gone in and got three assessments. We wonder why that might be. Someone like Mabel down the back bottom has had what we think of as a traditional trajectory, going through community care and then going to residential care. Other people go into residential care and die very quickly after they do. So you're putting together all these complex stories and you've got to think, how are we going to analyse this? And as I said, this is only part of the data. But it is possible that simple analysis can give really new basic information. So this is the first step that people who've got an aged care assessment, and we've actually gone back a year to see whether they've got any other sort of care previous in the last year. So if they hadn't, we go, there's no. And what actually happens is this diagram gets bigger and bigger and bigger because you go five and covers a huge piece of paper. If you but I've just given the example that what we found there, that so out of these 34,000 people who got an aged care assessment, 6% died before anything happened, but another 19% got no service in the next 3 years. So they're going through an assessment, and this brings up the whole question of, you know, what is the aged care assessment doing? And in fact, there's a report out recently about revamping the whole way assessments work. And there was a particular policy issue that the department was interested in, Department of Health and Ageing, about people getting additional assessments. So you should only have to get, at the most, one every 12 months. But what we found was that there were a quarter of people were getting an extra assessment during the year, and there was people getting even up to five. And that actually did result in some changing of the rules about how you needed to be assessed. So that's just a couple of examples. We're now doing, as I said, we're doing more complicated things, like we're trying to determine whether community having types of community care does delay your entry into permanent residential care, or does it help you not go there at all? And that's the sort of analysis that gets quite hard to do, and you have to think of things about competing events in statistical terms and stuff. So I think it's important to sort of set out your questions, and the way we've found to do it is we start off with the basic stuff and then get more and more complex analysis. The other possibilities here is that we have other data sets with the statistical linkage key in them, in community services, disability services, home and community services, which is a whole range of services going from Meals on Wheels to some nursing services for people in their home, both which work in both the aged care and disability sectors. The alcohol and drug services and mental health collections are presently trying the statistical linkage key. And, of course, then we will be able to link to health data sets and education and who knows what. We don't actually hold education data sets in the Institute, but we do have this one little project that I'll just talk about very briefly. It's a different model of linkage because it was done by the state departments responsible for child protection, giving the names to the departments of education in the state, who then found the people, got their results, and put the IDs back, and we sort of get the, it's sort of a variant of the model where we're the recipient of the data in this case. It's only a subset of children on orders on particular guardianship or custody orders. Now, at the moment, the education departments do reading and numeracy for national reporting years 3, 5, 7, also 9, but we're not doing that. At this stage, they were all doing it as a state-based system, apparently calibrated to a national framework, but we're not quite sure about it. So it was a pilot study in five states. We now have a NAPLAN, which is starting in 2008, which is a nationwide assessment, which is done years 3, 5, 7, and 9. And there's also actually another data collection, which I mentioned the other day, which is when the first year of school, the teachers assess all the kids, each kid on a whole range of measures. It's based on Canadian model. So this again gave us quite a complex set of data, because we've got people who start, we have over 4 years, and we've got people who started in 1 year, people started in 2005, people who went through the whole lot, and they might either achieve the benchmark or not achieve the benchmark. And because there's five states and they're a bit different, it's very hard to put all the data together, but we did get some. This is an example of Queensland. So this is all students. This is Indigenous kids again. So this is... Oops, sorry. What is that? I can't touch it. I should use a thing. You can see in Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders, again, the disadvantage. LBOT is language background other than English, which is another... Because the Australian population is now quite diverse, we usually do analyses by them as well. And remote and very remote. As you can see, there are parts of Australia which are very remote, although they're not big numbers. And the last one is the children on guardianship and custody orders. They tend to be a bit like, have the experience of what Indigenous children do. But there was some positive results. I've got the report. I've got one copy of the report here if anyone wants to take it, because it's sort of a mixed results because it's across states and different times and things. But generally, there was a result that 6 out of 10 children on orders did who were there for the whole 4 years did have what was regarded as a positive trajectory. So they either met the benchmarks or they improved and met the benchmarks in later years. So there's an idea for some sort of ongoing relationship or collection that'll start to track these things. So, I hope I haven't taken too long. So Jenna asked me for some reflections on the process. And I think when I first... And Melissa said something like this the other day, that data linkage does not always fit the traditional model of research. I'm actually a population geneticist by original training and then a statistician. So I'm used to the normal research model. But when you've got a lot of data available, you mightn't have exactly what you want. So you've got to sort of develop specific questions, and that might be an iterative process, whereas you look at the data, see whether it can answer your first question, and you come back and... But because it's such a valuable resource, which I think should be used, you've just got to accept that might have slight imperfections that don't quite fit your research question, but you can sort of tailor your question. And I think if you have perfect linkage, you probably don't need to worry about this one again, but you do need... So in some cases, we have the same people doing the linkage and analysis because they're experts on those particular data sets. So they know the vagaries of the linkage and so forth. But if you've got different people doing it, it may be necessary to have a dialogue between those who are doing the linkage and those who are doing the analysis. And particularly if you have data sets, you know, where you can throw up anomalies, like, you know, we do have cases where people die and then receive a service. Unfortunately, that's so small, we're saying, well, that's a good actual good measure, that, you know, only 0.01% people do that, because it shows our linkage is probably pretty good. But, you know, if there's particular orders, you expect people to do things or something like that, and they don't work, then you've got to... that might need to form your linkage, how the linkage is done, or the checks on the linkage at least. And so you may need that dialogue. And the other thing about the main project I've talked about is that really I would like to see that as an ongoing, you know, system, because we want to follow people over quite a number of years. But you are, you know, in the research. This is, we got sort of seed funding to, this is a pilot project, but at the same time, people want to see results from you, the data you've got immediately. So you've got to sort of get some sort of immediate results or some sort of prototype results, even though you really want an ongoing linkage. We've got a number of projects now which could expand in a sort of ongoing manner, but we, at the moment, we don't have a ongoing linkage system as such. That may change, but... And, yes, it is true that you need patience. I've got another example where I'm hoping when I go home that we're redoing a linkage of people in nursing homes using hospitals, and all the states, you know, we had a meeting with all the states, so it's a great idea, supportive, and the Commonwealth supportive. It meets, also meets criteria for a particular performance indicator. And so, but it's now been a year, and I'm hoping when I go home we'll actually, we'll have all the data to do it. So you need a bit of resilience to do this stuff. Although if you get your new system up and working, it may, that's the sort of things you'll solve, I hope. And we may get there, you know, 5 or 10 years down the track. So just, we do have some publications on the linkage methods if you're interested. And also, so I've got, this is the feasibility study we did for linking those three collections. I've got, because it's only small, I've got half a dozen copies, so people can take those. I don't want to take them home. I've put up our sort of, I've put out our basic one. If you might just be interested in looking at pathways for aged care, that's sort of a very basic overview of the initial results we got. And then the educational outcomes one, I've got one copy of that. But all these, how do I get out of here? all these are, in fact, available on our website. And so if you go to our website, you find them all there. That's part of our brief, is everything we do is public, pretty well everything we do is publicly released in the public domain. If you can't find something, you can email me, or if you've got any questions, be happy to answer.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
This recording is copyright of Iris 2011. It may be reused under the terms of the Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Sharealike 2.5 UK Scotland license. Go to www.iris.org.uk for more information.